Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gabaza, and for today, we are looking at something that affects all of our lives in one way or another, especially in this modern connected world, and that is internet access in South Africa, but more specifically, the fiber internet industry and, you know, some of the customer service aspects that actually go with that, because it's nice to have really fast internet, it's nice to be connected, but what happens when things go wrong, either at your house, at your business, you know, wherever you are, and you need to have, I think in the industry they talk about uptime, you know, people are paying to have, you know, their lines on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, especially in a world where people are trying to connect from home to meetings, Zoom, Microsoft Teams, all of these, you know, all of these different platforms. So the need for connectivity all time, everywhere, anywhere. That's, you know, the type of conversation that we're going to be having today. And for today, we are joined by Simon Swanepoel, who is the CEO of RocketNet, which is, you know, one of the local fiber providers, just to talk about what the state of the industry is, but more importantly, how is it looking all on the customer services side. Simon, greetings to you today.
Morning, Madiwe, and good morning to the listeners of your podcast.
Thank you so much for being with us. You know, when it comes to fiber operators, I think, you know, some of the brands, some of the names are still, you know, lesser known than the mobile operators, the likes of Vodacom, Cell C, and MTN, you know. So from that point of view, when we talk about RocketNet, maybe you could give us just a brief overview, just around, you know, the company. What is it that you guys do? Is it just homes? Is it businesses? And what's your footprint like at the moment?
Yeah, sure. So I think, Madiwe, I think it's quite important that we just unpack the history of telecommunications in South Africa. We come from quite a long history of where it started off as the post office, and that was then converted to telecom. And then I think the first sort of broadband internet access kind of started happening in around 2000, 2001. And that was seen, and that was mainly predominantly dominated by telecom. And then I'm sure you remember the old dial-up internet service providers that would then, you know, have customers dial up with that ding dong, kind of like noise over your modem. And that, you know, that was, I think we saw companies like MWeb sort of buy out quite a lot of small ISPs. Now, when we talk about, you know, the big mobile operators, as you mentioned in your introduction, these guys have predominantly dominated mobile, which requires huge amounts of capital. And then, you know, we have the ISPs, which is internet service providers, that basically provide a internet service to a customer on a specific fiber network operator's line. So, for example, RocketNet, which we founded in 2016. So it's still quite a young company. We provide services over most of the major fiber network operators, for the likes of OpenServe, Vumatel, Metro Fiber Networks, Frogfoot, etc. So I think it's quite important to just, you know, for the listeners to understand, and I think a lot of laymen don't realize that there's a clear differentiation between an internet service provider and a fiber network operator. The fiber network operator is the company that's laying the actual fiber in the physical ground. They're actually trenching and digging up the roads and then providing a service to, you know, and that's often where we find, you know, Madiwe, where we sometimes do have some issues as an internet service provider, because for, you know, in certain instances, you would have, for example, a certain fiber operator that would have exclusive rights to a certain estate or an area. And if their fiber is down or their fiber or has been dug up and broken, obviously then, you know, every single internet service provider like RocketNet and many others, would then also have issues. So I think that's just sort of a just to unpack it a little bit on what where fibers come from in the country, and how it fits together.
So from that point of view, when it comes to RocketNet, I think, yeah, one of the things to just get a brief sense on is maybe just where do you guys actually operate, and, you know, how perhaps any metrics that you can share with us just around the type of progress you've been able to make in business so far. And when exactly did you guys start RocketNet?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've always been personally involved in IT from a very young age. I've really enjoyed it. I've had a passion for it. And my passion for telecommunications came about when I was sort of 16, and I've always wanted to be involved in telecommunications. I then purchased a business in 2011, which had an operator's license, which allowed us to operate as a licensed telecommunications provider in South Africa. We then operated primarily just doing business services. So we would deliver fiber to the business. We would deliver fixed line voice over IP services to business customers. And we picked up quite a lot of big corporates. And we were always fixated on customer service. Our mission and objective has always been, and I think it comes from a great passion of mine, is that I've always loved what I do with an amazing amount of passion. And for me, I get great joy seeing customers actually consuming services that I've experienced, and I enjoy that. Then we, you know, we kind of go down the timeline to around 2016. And there was an opportunity in Kailani Estates. We partnered with a fiber network operator called Metro Fiber Networks. And Kailani Estates was it was almost like a perfect use case. It was just after Parkhurst had launched their fiber to the home with Vumatel. And the use case there was quite unique because they're on quite a lot of rock, and there's quite a lot of signal issues. So a lot of the mobile network operators have a lot of difficulty, you know, delivering a service to Kailani Estates. So a lot of people actually had no connectivity from a mobile perspective. So their cell phones would barely work, or no service, no signal. And we found that by launching a fiber to the home service there, we delighted so many of the residents in that area because it was almost like desperation, where they were kind of came from the dark into this connected world of speeds of up to 100 megabits per second at the time. And from that point in time, we went from strength to strength. I think just on our first marketing drive, in the first weekend, we probably signed up about 20% of the estate. So that was super exciting to be part of, and it was really cool to see. And that kind of steamrolled our mission, and I think a lot of light bulbs went on within the business, and we started seriously looking at consumer-based fiber. Not only is your risk spread amongst as a business, you know, not only is your risk spread amongst you know, a vast majority of people, you're also creating you know, this, where we come from an ADSL of like maybe 1 or 2 megabits per second in speed wise, and you're taking the customer up to 100. And then the sky's really the limits in terms of what you can do, because I mean, if you look at, you know, all the different remote meeting services, if you want high definition video, I mean, you need a really good connection. And what's quite important is you also need pretty good Wi-Fi in your house. So I think that's pretty important. So that's sort of the journey of RocketNet. And we've also kept to our core of just remaining customer focused. You know, we really, really are passionate about delivering the best possible customer experience to our customers that they could possibly have.
No, thanks so much for that. And I think when it comes to the ISPs, they usually have, you know, certain areas within which they, you know, tend to operate. So from a RocketNet point of view, if someone, you know, is listening to this, you know, from different parts of the country, where exactly can they actually access your service? Where are you guys available?
Well, anyway, we probably just about countrywide. So on our website, rocketnet.co.za, we have a list of fiber network operators. And we've partnered with the majority. I mean, there's a huge list of operators there. We have a coverage map on our website as well. We're in Durban, we're in Cape Town, we're in Johannesburg. Our major technology data centers, which is basically where we terminate a lot of the, you know, if a customer needs to get out of the country or get access to the internet, a lot of the servers, I'm just trying to speak in layman's terms as well for the listeners. A lot of the servers sit in our data centers that are located in Cape Town and Joburg and Durban. We've partnered with fiber network operators rolling out fiber access in East London now. There's Port Elizabeth, there's Nelspruit, there's Bloemfontein. So a lot of the major metro areas. But, you know, as I mentioned just in a chat that we were having just before this, is that what we are noticing is that we're seeing now fiber network operators growing and expanding and going into, you know, places like Ladysmith and smaller smaller metros in South Africa, which is probably the next big rush. Initially, the big high density, high LSM groups were the gold rush for fiber operators, and because what the industry normally did was they put fiber where they could make the biggest or quickest return on investment, and normally what would happen is another fiber network operator, it would be uneconomical for them to go and lay fiber cables in those areas once an operator had started to cable up, you know, and deploy fiber in those zones. The only other real fiber operator that we see doing that is OpenServe, which is the wholesale division of Telkom. And they are obviously constantly hanging on to their market share, and have excelled in the last 5 years, and really are actually becoming where they were the monopolistic type of giant beforehand. They're really becoming hell of a competitive and really reliable. So it's good to see that type of competition as well, where you have two different fiber cables, you know, that you can actually choose from. And, you know, if you had two different fiber network operator cables coming into your house, you know that you would have better redundancy, especially when you're working from home, which is also an added bonus. So it's really exciting to see more of that type of competition in the South African market.
When it comes to customer service, this is something that you've mentioned, a few times already, during this discussion. Am I correct? Because we did make this assertion at the beginning that customer service on the side of fiber operators seems to be a little bit easier to manage and deal with than on the side of mobile network operators, because at the end of the day, for the consumer, sometimes they don't really care, you know, sometimes where they're getting their connection or how their connectivity is arriving at their house to their device, their TV, their fridge, iPad, or whatever it is. You know, they just want to have, you know, things working. Things working all time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So when it comes to industry-wide, you know, are we correct in making that assertion to say that from a customer services point of view, at least until now, it's been a bit easier to address some of the service issues on the fiber network side as opposed to the mobile network side?
Yes, I think Look, I think if we have to just also try and unpack that and understand it better, is what we need to not forget is that a lot of the mobile networks, and we saw it in the first week or the first couple of weeks of lockdown when lockdown started, you know, they rely on a lot of customers roaming from different cell phone towers to different cell phone towers. And I mean, I'm sure everyone has experienced that no service or zero bandwidth throughput or internet speed when you're at a big sports game, you know, at a stadium. I mean, we've all had that experience. And that's specifically just is an illustration of how, you know, a mobile network is utilized for. Now, when you look at fiber is mostly, you know, it doesn't generally rely on contention. You generally get your full speed on the line. The networks are planned and developed to allow for customers even at peak times to receive a consistent and delightful experience. You know? So I think that the tricky part is obviously the, you know, it's very difficult for someone like a mobile network operator to know that 1,000 people are all going to connect to their tower and they've only designed it for, you know, 200. And it's also using wireless technologies. Fiber, I think, so what gives the consumer or the edge in customer service consistency is definitely the technology, which is fiber. So it is definitely, in my opinion, by far the most reliable means of connectivity. You know, it's not interfered by weather. It's not interfered by acts of God or anything like that. Other than sort of if there were major earthquakes or something like that, but it's pretty much reliable. And then we see the small, you know, what we've had is we've had a rise in the last sort of 6 or 7 years of the fiber to the home internet service provider. We've seen a lot of small companies because the market has been so kind to competitiveness. You know, it's really and some of the fiber network operators have really led the way in creating these open access networks that are very competitive friendly and you know allowing multiple internet service providers to compete. I think what's happened is people have absolutely, you know, and the fiber ISPs have become fanatical about delivering customer service because we know that is the only sort of that's the only way that we could differentiate ourselves from our competitors. Another thing that what we've seen is we've seen a massive amount of customers expect. So let's just go back to where lockdown started. We've seen customers that were traditionally on in corporate networks. They were working from an office. They were very used to having connectivity that the business would be paying, you know, maybe 10, even 15 times the price of a home connection. And now they've moved back to their houses and they're expecting this home connection to perform at a business grade, you know, sort of service. So I think, you know, between us, the ISPs and the networks that are running it, we've really tried hard to make sure that we are resolving faults in record time. We're getting customers back up, and it's been an absolute mission of ours to get obviously customers connected. We've understood that remote working hasn't been easy for a lot of people. We've seen our customer service agents in our call center also very much. We've seen clients that have called in extremely frustrated with the service. So yeah, I think it's been a tough time, but we've definitely seen customer service levels working together with the customers and et cetera.
And when it comes to that, I understand that you guys now have a platform that sort of helps to identify and actually resolve some of the challenges that people have. I'm currently on a fiber network at the moment, and usually if there's an issue, you have to, go into a portal, log a certain issue, and then most of the time, I have to give it to my ISP that they usually get in touch pretty quickly. And that's why I made the comment about, reliable customer service. They usually get in touch within 30 minutes just to, talk you through what's actually going on and maybe give you an estimated time within which you'll be back up and all of that. So within that context then, I guess using your technology, what's the actual difference? Like, what are you guys offering? What parts of, the process are you guys sort of automating along the way? And what technology are you guys using?
Yeah, that's something that's very core to our business. We have, for the last 4 years, have focused very heavily on customer self-help and, more artificial intelligence into the customer's end network. What does that mean? Basically, what happens is we find that a majority of the time we have customers that have internal network issues. It's actually not even the fiber, but they don't know what the problem is. So, I'm sure many people have experienced this, where traditionally what you would have done is you would have connected, you would have called up your customer service representative at your ISP. And what would have happened is there was, and we used to do it as well. It was a bit of a thumbsuck, because the person is not a technology advanced individual. They're just a layman. They don't understand what's going on. We say, let's reboot the router. I'm sure you've experienced that with your ISP. Have you rebooted the router? So what we wanted to do is we wanted to develop an application that had more intelligence into the customer's network. That basically means that we have created a app called RocketNet Probe. And what this app does, and you can download it on the Google Play Store as well as the App Store, but what this app does is it basically interrogates the customer's network to look for faults intelligently. It has a lot of crowdsourced information as well, which is anonymously given back to the artificial intelligence in the app. And then this app essentially, gives the agent on the other side a full overview of where the issues could be, from Wi-Fi dead spots to, router, the router's not connecting to the TV. It tells us, it might tell us that, you have an iPad that's sitting on the other side of the house. It's got a really low signal, and that's why you're not connecting. So, we've developed this app in a partnership with a Canadian development team, and we really believe that self-help is the future. Just from the basic questions, because what that does is it actually frees up our customer service desk when people can help themselves. They can also help themselves whenever they wish, and it provides the feedback to the customer on basic sort of first line support issues. Another thing that it can do is it can detect Wi-Fi dead spots. So a customer can walk around their house and they can see, the agent can actually pull a report on the back end and see where the Wi-Fi dead spots are. Now, before this technology that we developed, this kind of process would normally take sort of 20 minutes, maybe even half an hour, depending on how advanced the person was. But now we're looking at, times of maybe up to 1 to 2 minutes to resolve a customer's issue. So as you can, that's definitely then giving us an edge, because it means that our customer service agents are far more, they're freed up to actually tackle the real issues and deal with problems. Like, for instance, when a customer's line has gone down because someone was digging up the road, We can then put pressure and escalate and try and get that turned around as quickly as possible.
Okay, cool. Now, Simon, it really sounds like the technology that you guys have is probably helping to improve a lot of the efficiencies that you guys have to deal with, taking down, you know, some of those 20 to 30 minute type of processes to diagnose some of the customer complaints and queries, but being able to take those down to maybe 1 or 2 minutes. And I can imagine that, you know, when you scale something like that up over a customer base, you know, 5, 10, 20,000 people that are using something like this in their homes or their small business, it really probably saves you guys a lot of time, energy, effort, and money, at least from a customer services point of view, being able to use your staff in a better way. So I guess from that point of view, I think something that people tend not to fully understand, and you did make that relationship clear at the beginning, that a lot of the time the really hard issues to deal with are the physical issues. Maybe there's been a fiber line that's actually broken, and that's not up to you guys, that's up to the fiber network operators, the OpenServes, the Vumatels, the Frogfoots of this world. So how have you found that relationship to have been? Because those types of things, they do take some time, but they do seem to get resolved pretty quickly. You know, so maybe you can describe to us what those types of bottlenecks look like. But also at the same time, I'm just thinking about some of the secondary towns that you were talking about, the Ladysmiths, etc., and thinking, how does all of this fit into some of those towns where you might not have the resources of the repair teams in Joburg? You know, do you think ISPs such as yourself will be able to at least continue being able to offer, I guess, a similar type of customer experience in some of the secondary towns?
Yes, Madhuri, I think those are very, very important questions. And develop strong relationships and bonds with the fiber operators that are actually laying the physical cable. It's really important for us as well to scrutinize and have meetings before we actually onboard any operator onto our network. We look at a lot of different things, and we look at how they deploy their networks. We look at the technology behind the networks. We look at a lot of the you know, the quality that they've had. We actually even, you know, I speak to my fellow other ISPs and see how their experience has been. So, you know, for us, it's quite important because that can also destroy our brand, because, you know, we rely on these operators in the outer areas. And then, yeah, just getting back to, you know, the issue of customer service, the biggest issue that we actually see is the customer's Wi-Fi in their house. So it's really important for us to diagnose, you know, with the help of our artificial intelligence applications, and to be actually able to then, you know, very quickly and efficiently detect and diagnose those issues. But I don't see that we're going to have any, I don't foresee any issues as we expand and grow into rural areas. Our call center is Johannesburg based, so they service a vast majority of Cape Town customers, a vast majority of Durban customers, and already quite a lot of customers around South Africa. I think it's just, you know, remote working has now become something that is normal, and people just accept, you know, you could be wherever you are and still assist. We use AnyDesk as well. So we've partnered with AnyDesk, which is sort of like a screen sharing application, just in case we needed to, you know, connect to the customer's computer remotely. And we also go the extra mile. You know, we help people fix things like Xbox issues and sort of problems where it would be, you know, we go beyond the call of duty to, you know, help the customer and fix their issues that many ISPs would just say, phone up your IT service provider.
I see what you did with that Call of Duty reference in Xbox.
Excuse the pun.
But as we end off, Simon, maybe from a consumer point of view, when it comes to internet connectivity in South Africa, it's been quite a sore point for many people over the last couple of years, because connections, especially over mobile data, have been the primary mode for a lot of people, you know, to connect. And that has always been a highly priced sort of environment for consumers on the mobile side. But when it comes to fiber, we've seen a lot of uptick. Just talking to the likes on this platform, we've actually spoken to the likes, you know, of Jacques from Vox. We've spoken to the guys over at Supersonic, and you know, others on this platform, just talking about the state of fiber. So when it comes to that, do you anticipate that the current fiber to the home and fiber to the business environment is an environment where prices are going to remain static, or is there room for prices to come down? Simply because fiber, when you look at it at you know, per megabyte, per gigabyte sort of usage point of view, and especially on the uncapped side, it still remains the most affordable sort of form of internet access. So do you anticipate that some of those pricing barriers are going to come down, or do you see those prices remaining relatively stable because in essence they already are some of the most affordable in the market?
No, absolutely. Yeah. Look, I think the concept of capped services over fixed line like fiber is definitely 20 years ago. You know, it's something that should never be marketed. We don't believe in capping our customers. What we are seeing, though, is we're seeing the industry in terms of pricing. We're seeing the industry reduce. So for example, you know, what you would pay for a 50 meg now, you're paying for 100 meg. So we see the industry increasing speeds or doubling up speeds, but keeping the pricing the same. Now, you know, it goes back to that whole multi-choice DSTV thing. You know, it's very difficult to all of a sudden go and compete with Netflix when you've got to cut into your revenues and explain that to shareholders. So I think what we would see going into the future is we're going to see speeds increase, but I think we'll pretty much keep the pricing. You know, there's a lot of other things like the rand dollar, a lot of the equipment that we use in our networks, and even, you know, the development costs for our intelligence that we use, like the RocketNet probe, we pay this in US dollars. And most of the services that we consume as a business to service our customers, we pay for in US dollars. So I think, you know, it's definitely based on our exchange rate. It's definitely linked to inflation. But from what I can definitely see is that, you know, we are coming to the party. We are trying to keep prices low and, you know, just offer customers a little bit better bang for their buck. So I think that's really where the trend is going. What I also see now is there's some regulation around mobile data prices as well. And we've seen those drop quite significantly. But, you know, the next step for us would be to, and it's always been a dream and passion of mine, is would be to deploy fiber into more of the rural areas. I mean, we need to stimulate our economy. And the best way to do that is to get, you know, to get the majority of South Africa, not just the elite few, onto these high-speed uncapped connections where it actually is going to help the economy move forward. I think you'll see more entrepreneurial opportunities coming up. You're going to see the youth of South Africa utilizing, you know, the internet for self-learning, for self-help. So that's going to be key. And I was actually dreaming up sort of some concept where we could subsidize, you know, the rural communities, you know, by people that are in higher LSM groups, where they could maybe donate a portion of their bill every month, and they could add, let's say, 30 rand a month onto their bill, to subsidize and give back to developing fiber in the rural areas. I mean, we could even look at, you know, certain taxes in the industry and actually feed that back into funding, you know, rural development. But we definitely need cooperation with government. We have people like the Digital Council of Africa as well that are working with government and lobbying for, you know, for connectivity throughout the country.
Yeah, no, we've actually spoken to the Digital Council previously when they were, it should be FTTX, when they were still the FTTX Council. I remember we did speak to them sometime last year, in fact, just around some of these issues. I know I'd said it was the last question to ask, but you mentioned government just now, so maybe we can just quickly wrap up there, because there has been a new minister appointed for communications and digital technology, which is the ministry that, you know, would ultimately your business would fall under from a regulatory point of view. Just some thoughts on the appointment and what that might mean for the regulatory environment as we as a parting shot.
Yes, look, I mean, I hope I see she's quite well educated. She has a couple of degrees behind her name, and it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be ICASA are definitely looks like they're getting the ball rolling with regards to regulation, and hopefully we see more participation from government in trying to stimulate the rural communities and getting the rural communities connected and bringing pricing down for that, because I think that's really where the key to economic growth in this country lies.
So that's been us. We're talking to Simon Swanepoel, who is the CEO of RocketNet. They are an internet service provider. He was giving us some insight into the state of customer services in the industry, highlighting some of the factors that make it a bit easier to manage customer services on the side of internet service providers on fiber, as opposed to, some of the things that are seen on the side of, mobile network operators. That fact, he's actually pointing out the fact that the static environment within which fiber operators tend to find themselves makes it a bit easier to attend to issues, because if there's 20,000 connections that are meant to be in an area, then that number is unlikely to fluctuate, versus if you were to go to a sports match, for example, where you might have up to 50,000 people in a stadium all trying to connect to the same couple of cell towers in an area. All of those things tend to create congestions and issues on the network that are unlikely to be seen for internet service providers. Just ending off talking about pricing and some of the artificial intelligence that's actually being used to diagnose customer issues, and one can imagine the type of cost savings from a business point of view that can take place when you're able to scale some of those solutions over a large user base. So Simon, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Mudiwe, and thank you to your listeners.
This is Mudiwe's Take.
In a country where the cost to connect to the internet has been such a sore spot for consumers over the last decade or so, the rise of fiber operators and internet service providers that are providing internet connectivity through fiber has really been, I think, a bit of a game changer, particularly for fiber to the home and fiber to the business sort of applications. But that has been the reserve of the main metros in South Africa over the last couple of years. So it's really good to see that rural connectivity has become a big issue, something that all of these companies are trying to solve, because it is still the cheapest way for people to connect to the internet. And the big reason for that is because so many of these ISPs offer unlimited plans, right, at really fast speeds. So that combination of being able to consume as much data as you want, but at the same time having it at at a decently fast pace, that's really, really good. And the more that we can solve for some of the more outlying towns and areas, the better that connectivity is gonna become. I think the little piece we didn't really discuss is what 5G is going to mean, because that's the other piece of the pie that at the moment people are getting ready for 5G. And where fiber is concerned, a lot of people see 5G as being complementary to fiber, because you will have fiber that's being used to, let's say, connect into an estate, a neighborhood or something, and then you can then use 5G as a way to actually then connect to the rest of those maybe houses, which in turn reduces the costs and all of that. So whatever applications there are, I think the message is clear that people need to access the internet more. It's becoming more and more of a necessity as we become more connected. We keep talking about digital adoption, and yes, each new year we talk about higher rates of technology use, technology adoption, but it's not one of those things that's a nice to have anymore. I think a lot of people learned at the start of the pandemic that either they really did need to have something that was stable and cost effective at their houses in terms of connectivity, or a lot of people realized that skimping on certain costs around connectivity, because they always relied on getting that fast connectivity at work, was no longer luxury. This is something, and in the long run you can actually save yourself, because if you are in a situation where you do have that ability to have a fiber connection at your home or at your small business, one, you're reducing the cost to connect, but more than anything else, you can connect all your other devices to that thing, and you end up saving, especially on the mobile data side. Perhaps only use that type of data when you're out of the house, out of the office, etc. So all of these different things, they really do need to come together, and it's good to see that the fiber operators are working on this issue. Good to see from that front, but it will be good for us to talk to even more. As I said earlier on, we've spoken to Jacques Dutoy, who is from Vox. We've spoken to the guys over at Supersonic. I think we've had conversations with the Digital Council, and now we've just spoken to RocketNet. Talk to more of these people, because connectivity is a way of life. It's something that's affecting all of us, something that is relevant to all of us, and something that we all need to participate in. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, where #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.